In every prophecy update, there are usual things that I will talk about. For example, we will usually talk about earthquakes because they just seem to be happening more and more all the time. March 11th of last year, you know what happened in March 11th. Well, actually, Matthew 24, Jesus said there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. These are the beginnings of birth pangs. We know that God will use these things to wake us up. March 11th last year, the big earthquake in Japan, the tsunami that followed. Earthquakes are kind of God's wake-up call. How many of you get up in the morning with the help of an alarm? That's your wake-up call. That gets your attention and makes you realize, hey, I got to wake up. Well, earthquakes are among those wake-up calls that God will use to get our attention. Usually every year we will talk about, I usually throw in something about the false Christs, and that's because Jesus said in Matthew 24:24, false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. And this year, something I became aware of a couple months ago, there's a fellow that is out there. He's out there. And he claims to be Jesus, literally. He claims he is literally Jesus Christ. Handsome-looking fellow. His name is Alan John Miller. He goes by, well, one of the things he goes by is AJ. But if you call him Jesus, he'll respond to that because he believes that he is Jesus reincarnated. That's his belief. The girl on his right, our left, her name is Mary, and she actually claims herself to have something special. She claims to be the reincarnation of Mary Magdalene. And I'm sure, though, if it weren't for Dan Brown's books, they would have never come up with this idea. But that, so they're live-in boyfriend, girlfriend. And isn't that convenient? Here's a little bit about the fellow.
Well, now the Australian cult leader who calls himself Jesus Christ. Alan John Miller is based in Queensland's Bible Belt, but is now on the move, spreading his web around the country. We've had a team of reporters on his trail, beginning with Nick Coe.
To me, it's just a name that I was given by Mary and Joseph, my parents, 2,000 years ago.
So in other words, we now have a spirit talking to us about future events.
I remember everything from my time 2,000 years ago right the way through the last 2,000 years.
Myself and Mary are not sure.
He's the ex-Jehovah's Witness turned self-styled religious leader with a growing base of followers who claims to be nothing less than the Son of God.
The cult that caused the cult experts in America the greatest concern were the cults where the cult leader called himself Jesus.
People have more money.
Alan John Miller, also known as AJ, but insisting his original name is Jesus Christ. First of all, what do I call you? Do I call you Alan? Do I call you AJ? Or are you Jesus Christ?
And it doesn't worry me what you call me. The main reason I'm honest with people about my identity, about being Jesus, is because I feel to misrepresent that would actually be lying to them.
He lives on a country retreat near Kingaroy in Queensland, and his influence is small but growing. So much so, dozens of followers are buying up nearby land just to get closer to him.
When you feel certain things for a person, you obviously generally want to be close to them, and a lot of people feel that they'd like to be closer to myself and Mary.
Mary is Mary Suzanne Luck, who also claims strong biblical links to the past.
Mary was Mary Magdalene in the first century.
Who's now your girlfriend?
Yes, partner. My girlfriend, partner. I actually met her in her parents' lounge room.
As a layperson, I'm trying to understand what the odds are you, as someone who claims to be Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. could meet Mary Magdalene in her parents' lounge room 2,000 years after you died. Can you understand how I might just struggle with that a bit?
When you understand the full divine truth about the soul and its power and desire and its power, and also the fact that we've lived one life.
Alan John Miller's ambitions stretch far beyond just the so-called Queensland Bible Belt. He's taking his message on the road with a series of public seminars in community halls, just like this one behind me on the New South Wales-Victorian border. His followers believe he's the original Son of God. Jesus Christ himself. Even his own literature promotes himself as someone who's returned to earth after 2,000 years to teach us all what he calls the divine truth.
You can find his teachings on YouTube. They are kind of a mixture of pop psychology. When he is with people, it's what the fake psychics would call cold readings. He kind of manipulates people. His teaching, some of his teaching is outright demonic because he's teaching people how to talk to the spirits, the spirit world, how to channel spirits. The Bible forbids that, by the way, because that's how you're going to get lied to. Satan is the father of lies. So very strange. He is nice, warm fellow. I mean, oh my gosh, when you listen to him talk and stuff, you like him. You like him. Now, some of you may be tempted to think, well, wait a second. What if this really is Jesus? Because, no, don't laugh at this, because I think things like this every once in a while. What if he really is Jesus? I mean, wasn't Jesus rejected by the religious establishment when he came? How do you know this isn't anything different? Well, I know that this isn't Jesus because the Bible tells us how Jesus will come back. And it's not by reincarnation. Acts chapter 1 says, "And when he had spoken these things while they watched, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood up by them in white apparel, who also said, 'Men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven will so come in like manner as you saw him go into heaven.'" He's coming in the clouds. Yeah. Now, unless Andrew, or what is his name, Alan John, can figure out how to walk on clouds, I'm going to have a hard time with him saying that he's Jesus. He is what the Bible calls a false Christ. One among many. This is one of the kinds of things that simply reminds us we're in the end times. The Bible talks about a war that is coming, and we think, I think that this is something that could actually happen prior to the rapture, prior to the tribulation period. It is a war that we call the Gog or Magog War. It comes from the book of Ezekiel. If you want to follow along in Ezekiel, we're going to be looking at Ezekiel chapter 38. I'd encourage some of you, if you want to do a little more study on yourself, read chapters 38 and 39. Fascinating stuff. This is stuff that has not yet happened. And I think because of some clues, this is a whole different study, but I think we can kind of pinpoint this as happening prior to the rapture. Ezekiel 38 says, "The word of the Lord came to me," this is Ezekiel speaking, "saying, 'Son of man, set your face against Gog and the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. And say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Gog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. I will turn you around, put hooks into your jaws, and lead you out with all your army, horses, and horsemen, all splendidly clothed, a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya are with them, all of them with shield and helmet. Gomer and all its troops." Now, that's not Gomer Pyle. I just want you to know that. Golly! "The house of Togarma from the far north, and all its troops, many people are with you. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya are with them, all of them with shield and helmet. Gomer and all its troops, the house of Togarma from the far north and all its troops, many people are with you. Prepare yourself and be ready, you and all your companies that are gathered about you, and be a guard for them. After many days, you will be visited. In the latter years, you," talking about this leader of nations, "you will come into the land of those brought back from the sword and gathered from many people on the mountains of Israel." That's talking about a day when people will be brought back into Israel. That's kind of like today. "Which has long been desolate, they were brought out of the nations, and now all of them dwell safely. You will ascend," talking about this leader, coming like a storm, covering the land with a like a cloud, you and all your troops and many peoples with you. Now, Ezekiel is describing a battle of many nations against Israel. And who are these nations? We have some clues about some of it. And as I'm finding, some of our clues change over time. And so I'll just be upfront. Some of you will say, yeah, but that's not what you said 3 years ago. And I'll say, you are correct, sir. One of the nations we think could be Russia. It's referred to as Rosh. And we'll talk about Russia in a minute. Meshach and Tubal, I used to say was Russia, because Meshach, Moscow, that kind of a thing. I've been finding that some of my sources don't say that. I've got maps that show Meshach firmly planted smack dab in the middle of modern Turkey. Modern Turkey. So some of you don't have to correct me and say, well, I thought it was Moscow. No, well, actually, there are people who think that it falls in modern Turkey. Persia, we know what Persia is. Persia is modern Iran. Modern Iran, that's the kingdom what used to be Persia. Ethiopia, we know Ethiopia is Ethiopia. It also covers modern Sudan as well. And Libya, well, we know about Libya, don't we? And actually things have changed with Libya, haven't they? Fascinating to think about. Let's talk about some of these nations. I don't know if I can get this done in time. I tell you, first service, I went way over because there's just too much to talk about. I talk about often about when I'm preparing my studies about the cutting room floor, about all the stuff I didn't tell you. I'm only telling you half of the story here. There's tons of stuff that's out there in the news. Somebody came up to me first service and said, well, it's been kind of a light year on the news, hasn't it? I bet you don't have much to talk about. I said, are you kidding me? Oh, my gosh, this is like one of the best years ever, the best years ever. Let's talk about Russia. Things are kind of heating up in Russia. Here's a headline from December 1st. Putin prepares the Russian Empire to strike back. A little take on Star Wars, right? The Empire Strikes Back, right? Vladimir Putin used to be the Prime Minister of Russia. He did his full term and by constitutional rights had to step aside. So he's been president for a while. He's now running again for Prime Minister. And this is his platform. This is what he's running on, according to this, The Guardian, that's a UK paper. He wants to renounce the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty known as the New START Agreement that they made with Washington 2 years ago if the U.S. doesn't abandon its European missile defense plans. He wants to get rid of this current START Treaty. He wants to bring the former Soviet breakaway states back into the fold. The Kyrgyzstans, Tajikistans, and Stan and Ali and all those stands. He wants to bring them back into the fold and make Russia bigger again. He wants to tighten Russia's grip on Europe's energy supply. I don't know if you were aware of this, but Russia is one of the big kingpins in world oil. They have a huge oil reserve. They also have a big natural gas reserve as well. A lot of it going to Europe, and they want to capitalize on this. When oil prices go up, Russia becomes richer. Keep that in mind. That's the kind of important stuff. So this is what Putin wants to do again. He wants to, you know, bang the drums and get the Russians to like him again and put him back in power. That's what's happening. That's on the horizon. There's these events that we've been seeing around the world. The news people call it the Arab Spring. Have you been aware of this? Aware of the Arab Spring? Stuff like this is from Egypt. Now, if you've been following the news, long-time dictators over nations like Tunisia, Egypt, and Turkey have fallen. They're gone. Mubarak's no longer in power. Muammar Gaddafi is no longer in power. Now, we can say a hearty woohoo for that, right? We like that. But what's going to take their place? Now, some of us, with some of our news sources, we're convinced that it's going to be democracy. I hope so. I hope it will be. It could also be Sharia law, just as well. Because of all the conspiracy theories out there, I got to tell you, when this thing first started happening in one nation after another, I kind of began to wonder if the U.S. was behind it. I was thinking, what better way to have these nations, you know, find freedom than to have the dictators go and democracy, and they're using Facebook and all that. I mean, how bad can it be if they're using Facebook? You know, it's great, isn't it? Awesome, good. And who knows? I don't know nowadays if we'll ever know who really was behind it. I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder if Iran isn't a part of it, and you'll see a little bit in a minute why. We will have to wait and see how it all plays out. It may have started for a good reason. It may have started with pro-democracy and get rid of the dictators. Good. But there are things that are happening in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood, which is the foundation for a lot of bad stuff that has sprung out of that, is the dominant force politically right now in Egypt. We'll have to wait. We'll have to wait. This is one of the things you watch. Keep an eye on. Another thing, another nation we want to keep our eye on is Iran. That's the Persians. In February, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad addressed a huge crowd in Tehran on the 32nd anniversary of the revolution of Iran. I put the audio up, but we wouldn't understand it, so that's why I kept it out. He told cheering crowds that the Mahdi, the Muslim version of the Messiah, is the one managing the Egyptian revolution and global affairs. He says that this Mahdi will soon deal with the child of Satan. That's us. Now, is he trying to just take a good thing and spin it for his good? I don't know. I don't know. But I just think it's fascinating. We're all watching the Iran's nuclear ambitions. What in the world is a major oil producer needing nuclear energy for? We all kind of go, yeah, we don't believe you. It's for energy. We think you're trying to make a bomb. And they've made they've not tried to hide the fact that they want to wipe Israel off of the map, as well as us. And even though I'm not sure we're excited about the world doing enough to stop this, somebody's been busy. I mean, remember, a year and a half ago, there was the Stuxnet virus that was released in Iran and shut down all their nuclear, because they didn't use their antivirus software like you do, right? You use your antivirus software. And I don't know who made the Stuxnet virus. Well, I have no idea who would have made it. This year, in November, there were some massive explosions which destroyed one of their nuclear facilities. I don't know if you saw this. It also destroyed the architect, their godfather of their nuclear program died in the bomb. Here's some before and after pictures. There's before, and especially watch the buildings on the left-hand, top left-hand side. That's before, and this is after. It's kind of like gone. You know, just like it all blew up. Now, the Iranians claimed that it was an accident. And it could be. Others have other theories about who might have been behind it, whether it's CIA or Mossad or anything. Who knows? And how would we ever know? I don't know. It's fascinating. I remember reading an article about an Israeli general who said it was the hand of God. Named Ziva. No, sorry. That's for you NCIS. Man, sorry. Another current development that is brand new that's happening with Iran is their threat on a place called the Strait of Hormuz. This is a satellite shot. This is Iran right here. The Strait of Hormuz is where this land juts out, and it's only 17 miles across. And they are claiming that because the world is being so cruel with their sanctions against them. They want to tell the world that we shouldn't mess with them, and they're threatening to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. Why is that a big deal? Because 17% of the world's oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz. 1/6 of the world's oil flows through this. Their head of their navy, their admiral, said, it's easy for us to shut this down.
There is a new threat tonight from Iran to block a critical supply route for oil, the Strait of Hormuz, linking the Persian Gulf to the world's sea lanes. And tonight, the U.S. Navy is warning Iran, don't try it. More on all this now from our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Andrea Mitchell, in our Washington Bureau. Andrea.
Good evening, Lester. Iran has made these threats before, but the Pentagon issued that stern rebuttal because some U.S. officials worried this time it could be more than just bluster. Iran has been staging military exercises as they do near the strait, possibly, though, this time in response to a recent Senate amendment imposing the toughest sanctions ever on Iran's banking system and its oil trade. The Obama administration opposed that Senate vote, wanting to phase in more targeted sanctions, because the Strait of Hormuz, as you pointed out, is the key passageway for 1/6 of the world's oil. A crisis there could quickly add $25 a barrel, at least to oil prices, hitting the world's economy and, of course, stalling the American recovery right here, just as it's recovering. But another big concern is also that these new sanctions will hurt a key U.S. ally, Japan, which relies heavily on Iranian oil. The Senate voted unanimously, though, 100 votes in favor. They don't never do that. Now the president is really boxed in. If he tries to get around the sanctions, he'll be accused of being soft on Iran. If he doesn't, he risks higher oil prices and stalling the economic recovery here at home in an election year.
Now, why am I talking about this? Because these things have the potential of starting the Gog-Magog War. The players involved are the players that are mentioned in Ezekiel. And when the Gog-Magog War happens, I'm going to be really excited. I'm going to be packing my bags. Actually, there's no bags to pack because we're going to be getting close, gang. We're getting very close. Now, another one of the players we mentioned is Turkey, and it seems that it may be a part of this Gog-Magog War. I don't know if you remember about this raid that happened a year and a half ago, the supposed aid convoy of ships that came, and then the mean big bad Israeli commandos boarded the ship and they killed 9 people, and the world was aghast at this attack on this aid convoy to help the poor Palestinian people of Gaza. What you probably didn't know is that about a year later, the UN came out with a report saying that even though they still think that Israel used too much force, they actually agreed that Israel did the legal thing, that they handled it properly. Do you know who owned what the ship? The ship was owned. It was a Turkish ship. And the 9 people killed were Turkish. Though Turkey has for a long time been an Israeli ally. This is what's confused me, because Turkey and Israel have been allies for a long time. Things are kind of changing over the last couple years. Since 2002, there's been an Islamic movement inside Turkey. Turkey had been, up to 2002, a secular nation. Even though primarily Muslim, they've been a secular nation, ruled by a secular government. But starting in 2002, things started to change. Right now, their presidency, their prime minister, their parliament, their judiciary, their military, and their police are all run by people connected with the Islamic movement. Like 70% of their parliament, that kind of an advantage. Turkey is moving more and more towards being an Islamic-influenced nation. It's kind of tough because our president has held up Turkey a year or so back. He held up Turkey as being a model for these other nations because they were Islamic and run by a democracy. I'm not so sure with some of the things that we're seeing. Here's a headline from July 5th. Turkey doubles the size of its army. Now, they are telling the world that they're doing this to reduce unemployment. How's that? That would fix a lot of problems, huh? Reducing unemployment and to end terrorism in their nation is what they're telling everybody. they're adding 500,000 troops onto their military payroll. Now, think what would happen if Israel did that and added 500,000 people to their army. What do you think the world would say? They would probably cry over that. I don't know. Israel, this is how Israel's handling this. Israel has been canceling military contracts that they have had with Turkey. This current thing, this is from December 23rd, a $141 million contract for aerial surveillance systems. And they are concerned that if they give this technology to Turkey, that it'll end up in the hands of Iran. And they don't want that to happen. So things are kind of changing. Turkey is not quite the ally it has been. Those are things to watch. Middle East war, we're talking about it all the time, and I know this is why only three people came with me to Israel this year, but because we're always talking about Middle East war. But I got news for you, gang. Next time we go to Israel, and if there's still the threat, if this hasn't happened yet, there's still the threat of Israeli war, Middle East war, you know the safest place in the entire world that you're going to want to be is in Israel. I mean, read Ezekiel 38 and 39. That's where I want to be during one of these wars, is in Israel. So I just want to just kind of say this, okay? We're not going to go to Israel for a couple more years, but I just want to like lay that groundwork, okay? That's the safest place to be. Here's a headline from December 5th. Israel and Syria are bracing for war. This is just earlier this month. Both leaders of Syria and Israel are concerned that war in the region could break out somewhere between mid-December and mid-January. Now, maybe they're just trying to get attention, and maybe it'll be nothing. We'll find out. But I just think that they're both coming out with this at the same time. In addition, U.S. and Russian warships have appeared off the coast of Syria. That's what this article is saying. So somebody is taking this seriously. Here's an article from December 13th. U.S. stationed troops in Jordan to protect Jordan from a Syrian attack. I don't think I'd heard this until I came across this the other day. I don't think I'd heard this in the news. Some of the troops that are coming out of Iraq have been moved across the border into Jordan to protect Jordan from the potential of a Syrian attack. Now, I don't know why the Syrians would attack Jordan, unless it's because Mr. Assad is concerned that he's going to be the next dictator to go, so it gets everybody's attention by attacking somebody else. Who knows what the deal is there? But apparently the U.S. is concerned about what's going to happen. It's just interesting stuff. Watch the news. Pay attention. Let's talk a little bit about Israel. Israel is always the key to prophecy. We want to always look at Israel. Gang, the fact that Israel exists itself is the chief key to us realizing we're in the end times. We think of Israel being a nation, duh, like it's in my Bible that they're a nation, and there they are, you know. Of course they're a nation. Gang, we're living in an age where we don't realize the history. Before 1948, there was no nation of Israel. Had not been a nation since AD 70 when they were wiped out by the Romans. The fact that a nation having been wiped out and scattered across the world and 2,000 years later comes together again as a nation, that's incredible. That's a miracle. Now, some of the things involving the Gog-Magog war that involve Israel, here's some interesting things. This is from March 11th. How Israel could revolutionize the global energy sector. Now, last year I mentioned and I told you about a awesome find in the nation of Israel, a huge natural gas field that was discovered off the coast of off of Haifa. It's called the Tamar gas field, and they have figured that this thing is huge enough that it will run, it will take care of all of Israel's energy needs for the next 20 years. It's huge, absolutely huge. I don't know if I've told you that after discovering the Tamar gas field, they found another one that's twice the size. And they're planning that they're going to use the Tamar gas field to meet Israel's needs, and they're going to use this other one called the Leviathan gas field to sell off to the world. In fact, they're planning an undersea pipeline from the Leviathan gas field to Greece to distribute it through Europe. Israel's going to make a few bucks off of this, don't you think? What's really cool is now they've discovered oil shale on Israeli soil. Oil shale, not just an oil field like Jed Clampett had, but oil shale. It's in the rocks, and there's ways to mine this. And some of the estimates put it at 250 billion barrels of oil in this field. 250 billion barrels of oil. What does that mean? Saudi Arabia has 260 billion barrels of oil. So that would put Israel in the same ballpark as Saudi Arabia? That's fascinating. Absolute fascinating. Why am I saying this? Could it be possible? Ezekiel talks about this group invading because they want spoil. They want to take spoil from the land. Now that suddenly Israel is resource rich, which would threaten the Russian economy and all the Arab economies around them, could this be a reason? Maybe. I'm just throwing it out as a possibility. I'm not saying it is. Don't say that I said it is. I'm just saying it's something to think about, right? Are you following me so far? Here's another news thing. March 27th, they have installed their own missile defense system called the Iron Dome since March 27th. That's kind of interesting in case somebody wants to launch a missile attack on them. Now let's skip to another thing. The Bible often talks about events taking place in the end times that involve a temple being in place. I don't know if you are aware of this, but there is no temple in Israel. There is no Jewish temple in the world, because there's only one place for a Jewish temple, and that's in the city of Jerusalem. And there's only one spot in Jerusalem where a temple may be located, on what we would call the Temple Mount. There is currently something on top of the Temple Mount that kind of makes that difficult. A few Muslim Islamic mosques are sitting on top of the Temple Mount, and in fact, the Muslim community is what controls the top of the Temple Mount. And so the Jews doing anything on top of the Temple Mount is a cause for concern. And in fact, if you tried to pull something off Jewishness on top of the Temple Mount, you would be arrested. By whom? By the Muslims? No, by the Israelis. Because they know how dangerous it is to let any of these Jewish nutcases on top of the Temple Mount who might want to do something Jewish, because it would cause a lot, it would cause riots. It would be terrible. Here's something that came out January of this year, a year ago. There's a place, an organization called the Temple Institute. It's located in Jerusalem, and we have seen over the years how they have been involved with getting ready for a temple. We've seen how they've done things like they've produced garments. They've already made the garments for the priests, the laver, the altar of incense. They've made this huge menorah, all kinds of things. They are ready to start a temple. This year, something new came out in January. That's they have unveiled their first set of blueprints for a portion of the temple. This portion of the temple, not the entire thing, just a corner of the temple. It's a place that they are calling the Chamber of Hewn Stone. The Chamber of Hewn Stone, it is where the Sanhedrin will be meeting. The plans were paid for by the Temple Institute. This is the old temple, by the way. This is not the modern temple, or what they're suggesting. You'll see that in a minute. The plans were commissioned by the Temple Institute by a top Israeli architectural firm hired by the Temple Institute. This is the temple of hewn stone. That's fascinating. It includes internet ports, wireless communication systems, computer data storage, elevators, air conditioning, and underground parking. They just lack the permits. Absolutely fascinating. 21st century temple. Again, this is just the place that the Sanhedrin would meet. One portion of the courtyard. Now, where will this temple be built if the Muslims control the Temple Mount? There's a problem there. Big problem. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to Revelation chapter 11. I'll make you wait on that one. That'll be few years from now when we get to Revelation 11. But this year on our trip to Israel, we got some new insights on that possibility and what it would take for that to happen. I think we'll stop that. Another interesting thing in the news happened around the time of Passover. As of yet, the Jews do not practice animal sacrifice. They do not. They have not since AD 70. They do not practice animal sacrifice. There have been some fringe groups that talk about it. I showed you a video a few weeks back of the Samaritans, how they do practice animal sacrifice. Up until now, it's just been the fringe groups calling for sacrifice. This year, a significant Jewish rabbi, his name is Shmuel Eliyahu, has begun to make the suggestion that we ought to be doing this. And somebody said, well, aren't they going to laugh at us doing animal sacrifice? I mean, what's the SPCA going to say, you know, and all this kind of stuff. His reply was, well, they ridiculed circumcision as well, and we're doing that. So, who knows? Will it happen? There's going to be an awful lot to overcome for this to happen, because he's proposing that it happens on the Temple Mount. We'll talk about some more of that as we're going through Revelation. Europe. Talk about Europe. The Bible indicates that the Antichrist will rule over a kingdom that will be some sort of a revived Roman Empire. You get these ideas if you study Daniel chapters 2 and 7, a revived Roman Empire. Where would that sit currently? On what land mass would that sit, a revived Roman Empire? Europe. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, but things haven't been so nice in Europe lately. Europe is having some problems, right? Right? Having some economic problems, right? I mean, this is a picture from Greece. Spain and Italy are also on the bridge, on the brink of collapse. Here's an article put out December 12th. The United States of Europe beckons. And you will see this hitting the news. There are some suggesting that the cure for the economic woes is to put some teeth into these agreements that the European Union is trying to work out and trying to hammer. And what some people are suggesting is that the various nations who are a part of the European community, that they give up some of their sovereignty as nations and create a central government that goes beyond just sharing the euro and some trade agreements and all. They want to have a beefier central government. That's interesting, because that's just interesting. I mean, in fact, here's another article came out in October about some of the possible saviors of Europe. In Europe, new fears of German might. The Germans themselves have been a bit reluctant about this, because They are Angela Merkel is quite, we're not going to run this thing. What are you talking and looking to us for? But the powerhouse in Europe, the one stable economy in Europe is Germany. Germany has it together economically. And so there are these calls that if they create this central government, that the ones in charge ought to be the Germans. It's kind of fascinating, because 70 years ago, Hitler took his armies across Europe and conquered all these nations. And now, 70 years later, they're all begging, not they're all, but some of them are begging Germany to take over. That's interesting. That's very interesting. I know I'm going out on a limb here. This is the part of the morning where I'm going out on a limb. But I got to thinking about a passage in Revelation 13 that talks about the Antichrist. The Revelation 13 is all about the Antichrist. He's called a beast with multiple heads. And it says, "And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast." Now, typically, the past scenarios we've given is people have taken this as if the Antichrist, the person, would be some assassination plot that he survives. That's what people have suggested. And you'll see that in the books and the movies, the fictional things that are out there. But if you look at Revelation 13, the heads speak more about nations than they do about individuals. And so I just think it's fascinating that Germany, which had been pretty mortally wounded at World War II, is coming back. Is that it? I don't know. I'm just throwing this out as possibilities. We'll see. Who knows? Food for thought. Stay tuned. One last article. This is the last article before I get to a challenge. One last article. This one cracked me up when I saw it. I could not believe that I was reading this in the news. This dates from October 24th, just a few months ago. Here's what the article says. The Vatican calls for new world economic order. Now, here's the headline. Vatican called Monday for radical reform of the world's financial systems, including the creation of a global political authority to manage the economy. Now, don't get me wrong. I like the idea that a church says we ought to clean up our acts financially. I like that. That's a good thing. That's a moral thing to say, isn't it? Isn't it a good thing to say, you know, for the church to be standing up and say, you know what, stop being so greedy. You know, learn to help people who are less fortunate. Doesn't that sound like a good thing to say? Amen? Okay. What's fascinating is that they want to add some kind of teeth to it, some kind of political, global political authority to make this happen. That's what fascinates me. And what's so odd about this, when we get to chapters 17 and 18 of Revelation, what's so fascinating is that the Antichrist's kingdom is so closely tied to an end times apostate global world religion. Now, I'm not saying the Catholic Church is that. No, I'm not. I don't know that I want to go that far, but I just find this incredibly fascinating that of all people, it's the Catholic Church that's calling for a global economic authority, which happens to fit in. Actually, chapter 17 is about, Revelation 17 is about the apostate religion. Chapter 18 is all about the economic side of the Antichrist kingdom. Fascinating. Babylon, it's called. Fascinating. Okay. What do I do with all this? Get ready to go. What do I do with all this? You get ready to go. Jesus said in Matthew 24, he said, "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming." He tells us to watch. That means it is correct to pay attention to the newspapers. That means it's correct to have some sort of interest in prophecy. Because you don't want to be a person who's got their blinders on. He doesn't say stick your head in the sand. He says watch. Watch. Pay attention. Then he goes on to say, "But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." We ought to be ready. What do I think of? I think that speaks about having our lives together. Be ready. When he comes, don't be caught with your life in such a mess that you are embarrassed that he shows up. Get it together, gang. Get it together. Some of us, we have swallowed so much of the crud of the world, and we've allowed ourselves to get so lukewarm in our walk with God, allowed so much of the world's lies into our lives, like, you know, a little porn doesn't hurt. You know, it's okay if I mess around on my husband or my wife. You know, it's okay if I live for pleasure. I mean, everybody's doing it, gang. You're going down a horrible road. Jesus will come back one day. We want to be ready, absolutely ready for his return. Then Jesus goes on to say, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. The third thing is that we ought to be about doing. God has things for us to do in this world, gang. He doesn't want us running away from the world and hiding in a monastery somewhere with our eyes looking up at heaven and forgetting the people of this world. God has people for you to be with, things for you to do, places for you to go. For some in our church, it's turned out they've gone all the way to South Africa. Some people have gone to Russia. We've got one guy who's still stuck in Russia. And man, we're praying to get him home from Russia. We can hardly wait for Drew to come home and show you his beautiful bride. Oh my gosh, we can hardly wait for Drew and Nadia to come back. Some people have gone as far as Hungary and back again.
Yes.
Sorry. But it's really good to have you guys back. It may be that far. It may be next door. Maybe to the person who's got the cubicle next to you at work. Or the tool bay next to you at work. God has things for us to do. We are still lights in this world. And so, gang, with all of this stuff, I'm not sure we should be the crazy nut job that's out on the corner with the sandwich board saying, repent, sinners, the end is near. I think you need to get close to some sinners and tell them about Jesus. And bring them to him. To be doing. We need to be watching. We need to be ready. And we need to be doing. And then Jesus says, surely I say to you that he will make him, the guy who's doing, ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him and at an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, if you've listened to a prophecy update or two or three, or like me, you know, 30 or 40 or whatever, you get a little jaded at times. And you think, you know, that guy up front has been saying Jesus is coming back. He's been saying that for 30 years and he still isn't here. Correct. You are correct. We are 2,000 years after his first coming. Again, Jesus said it's a healthy thing. It's the evil servant that says, oh, he isn't coming back today. The healthy thing is to live as if it is today. Because you know what? There will be a day when that is true. And you need to be watching and ready and doing. And it may not be with the second coming. I mean, maybe I may have a heart attack tomorrow. I may be hit by a car or all whatever kind of stuff happens. But I need to be ready. I want to be useful to him. It's the healthy thing, gang. People will say you're a nut job because you think Jesus is coming back. But you know what? It is true. He is coming back. And the more you read the paper and you study your Bible, the more you realize, oh, did any of you see things that you hadn't been aware of today? At least two people were impressed by today's study. I'm glad. Dang, he's coming back. Let's be ready. Let's stand and pray.
I hear you moving in the wind, pouring out your spirit once again. Jesus, I just want to hear you calling out my name, saying, well done, good and faithful one. Well done today.